Hi, this is Mark Kleinschmidt, and you're listening to The Deep End on WCHL 97.9 FM and 1360 AM, the new WCHL. We're here. I'm back here in the studios at our location at University Place. And my mind, like I'm sure yours is on the upcoming election. Now, as you're listening to this show, we're just about 48 hours or so away from knowing who the next president's going to be, who, if we're going to have a new governor, are we going to have a new senator? What's the state of the North Carolina General Assembly going to be for the next long session? And I'm sure, as you are, you're exhausted. This has been probably one of the most anxiety-ridden election periods in our nation's history. And for North Carolinians, you know, we had a little taste in 2008 and 2012 of having the nation's focus on us. But really, it has never been this intense. Not only is North Carolina being seen as a tipping point state for who's going to be living in the White House come January 20th, it's also one of the critical states to determine who's going to run and have control of the U.S. Senate. And of course, eyes have been on North Carolina now for more than 6 months because after the passage of HB 2, which has put every Republican running for office in North Carolina at risk, from the governor all the way down to legislative districts. And I'm sure that the Democrats today wish that there weren't any Republicans running without opposition. And I think there are probably a few. I'm sure today they were kicking themselves for not making sure they have good candidates in every single House and Senate race for the North Carolina General Assembly. But as we're recording this, we're still 6 days out. And while that seems like a really short period of time in this political environment, well, it just seems that anything could happen. A shoe is going to drop somewhere at some point and change the dynamics. Just in the last 6 days, we were having conversations about a potential Hillary Clinton landslide. We were talking about Utah. We were talking about Texas. We were talking about a Senate majority that wasn't going to just rely on Vice President Kaine's tie-breaking votes. And there were even some, and I'll call them crazy people because I think they were stretching a little bit. There were some crazy folk out there talking about the potential of taking a majority, the Democrats taking a majority in the House of Representatives and unseating Speaker Ryan the old-fashioned way rather than a coup from inside. But now here we are 6 days later, and we are – well, every Democrat in the country is nervous because it appears that Hillary has lost – what was a certainty and a guarantee that she was going to take the White House. Joining me today to talk about this crazy mess that we find ourselves in is my good friend and local political observer who I'm sure you've seen his writings, and I know you know him as someone who worked with me in the mayor's office for a couple years, Jeff DeLuca. Jeff, thanks so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
So, Jeff, okay. Just how crazy is it? Am I crazy for feeling like it's crazy, or is it really just as crazy as it seems?
No, it is as crazy as it seems. But there is an explanation, and that explanation is we saw this happen right before the convention. The polls started to tighten again, and then Clinton had a huge convention bounce.
Right.
And then things settled back again, and then the debates happened, and Clinton had a big bounce again, and now they're settling again. So the story of the race is actually stability of this back and forth, and we're just at that point in the cycle right now where Clinton's poll lead is settling in the 5 to 7 point range rather than the much more comfortable 8 to 12 points that we were seeing before.
Right. You think she's going to be able to hold on to a 5 to 7 point range? It just looks like that trend line is heading down, 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 and it may be closer even as we speak to 2 or 3.
I don't think it's going to get that low. I really don't, just because of the strength of the ground operation that both the Clinton campaign and, importantly, the coordinated campaigns in each of these states have on the ground. I actually spent all of Sunday afternoon canvassing in southern Wake County, a fairly leans Republican area, but is now very hotly contested due to Trump's divisiveness, due to HB2. And the folks that I was being asked to talk to and asked to push to the polls were definitely the right kinds of people to be targeting, and
what
they are planning
the right
to
kinds
vote.
Of people?
Women, particularly women and independents, And Democratic men who may be in their, you know, between the ages of probably like 45 and 60.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's me.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But who may be enticed by elements of Trump's message.
Right.
And, you know, there's the lists are kind of split into two. You have your turnout people who they've modeled out every single voter in the United States. Don't think that the Clinton campaign doesn't know exactly who you are and your exact percentage likelihood to vote for you.
And ordinarily, the Republican nominee for president would have the same information, but it doesn't seem like the Trump outfit is sophisticated.
Well, the Republican Party was already behind the Democratic Party a couple of cycles in terms of data. They were starting to catch up, but Trump has just kind of thrown that out the window. And you've seen that they are their strategy now is to try and take certain elements of that universe that Clinton is reaching out to, mm-hmm. Particularly young people, people of color, and millennial women, to try to folks who. You know, a lot of people who supported Sanders, like I did in the primary,
right.
Try and make them less excited about voting. But then you see today, as we're recording this, President Obama is about to speak at UNC, and the line to see him is down the street, and he is going to tell everybody to go up to Chapel of the Cross and vote.
I'm sure that he is. You know, and it's interesting. A lot of people dismiss places like Chapel Hill and Orange County because I think folks assume they just know how we're all going to vote, and I think their assumptions are probably correct. But this year is unlike many in the past, where Wake County, Durham and Orange County, along with places like Mecklenburg and Guilford County, are actually counties to watch vis-a-vis any county in the country,
yep.
Right? I mean the turnout here in Orange County could very well tip the entire presidential race.
Absolutely. You have to bank votes. And this goes for anybody running statewide in North Carolina. You have to bank votes in Orange County in order to take care of the closer margins in some of those more suburban counties like Guilford or Forsyth that might be a little bit closer.
And as we talk about banking votes, I know that here in Orange County, where people are going to the polls in higher numbers than they ever had before for early voting. I took a look at them this morning with a few days left to go. It looks like we're going to pass 2012's numbers here within a day or two. And other counties are catching up. Places like Guilford County that until recently just had one early voting place finally opened up all over the county, and now there's more than I think the number is 104,000 people have already voted in Guilford County. Well, let's talk more about this when you come back. We'll dive down and into the deep end on a few of these other particular races of interest statewide right after these messages. And we're back. This is Mark Kleinschmidt, and you're listening to The Deep End. This week, we are diving deep into the end of the pool and talking about this crazy election season that we're involved in. I have my good friend and local Politico, Jeff DeLuca, here talking about the state of politics in our county, state, and country. And, you know, as I look today, as we're preparing to come on and record, I took a look at a lot of different forecast models from 538, CNN, HuffPost, and I even went to the SurveyMonkey website where they're keeping track of what's red, pink, like Carolina blue and Duke blue, depending on how far ahead, whatever candidate's ahead. And each of them is different. It seems as if we have a different list of battleground states. I mean, there are a couple that are on everybody's list. I mean, North Carolina and Florida are certainly on everybody's list. But for example, SurveyMonkey, they have South Carolina as a toss-up state. Nevada, we've seen go back and forth and back and forth from Clinton to Trump to Clinton to Trump. And today, on this day that we're recording, Trump is up by one. Arizona, which I think Clinton thought she had banked, is now back in the Trump into the Trump column. And now Colorado seems to be at risk. Jeff, what do you think? How do you think these states are going to end up falling out at the end of the day? And why do you think that?
So I'll start with Arizona because that is a historically red state that has come into play this year in a way that not many people were expecting. John McCain is facing a challenge to his Senate race. He'll probably win re-election. But there is an element – there are elements happening within these states that are very critical to the outcomes, and sometimes they go right down to the local level. For example, Maricopa County where Phoenix is, mm-hmm. You have Sheriff Joe Arpaio who is extremely controversial. He's civil rights groups have gone after him. The Justice Department, he's now been indicted. He's now been held in contempt of court. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of energy and organization around the race to get rid of him. He is up for re-election at the exact same time.
Arizona's HB2.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So he is going to lose that race. All the polling shows he is going to lose. But the Latino population in particular is very energized around getting him out of office in the Phoenix area. And like Wake County is to us, Maricopa County is the best hope to any Democrat right. running statewide in Arizona. So that's something to watch.
What about Nevada? I mean, it's everyone talks about how difficult it is to even poll and get a sense of what's going on the ground. And that happened during the primaries as well.
Exactly. Nevada is very difficult to poll. The person you want to look toward for all things Nevada politics is a guy named John Ralston. He writes for the Las Vegas Review. He's a great follow on Twitter. He said the other day that based on the early voting numbers as they stand, he does not see a path for Trump. Mm-hmm. But there is a very competitive Senate race to replace Harry Reid, who is retiring, and that is going to be extremely close.
Right. We have close Senate races in Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. which, of course, Clinton thinks she's going to be able to hold on to.
Yep.
And extremely close. We saw some numbers this morning in Florida mm-hmm. where Senator Rubio, who many thought was one of the leading candidates to get the Republican nomination, is now hanging on for his dear life to a Senate seat.
Yeah, he was supposed to be safe. You know, he had said he wasn't going to run for re-election, so he ran for president. Then he lost that race, so he kind of stepped in at the last second, mm-hmm. much to the chagrin of some who were hoping to move up to the Senate. But he ran, won his primary very strongly and seemed to be in good shape. And this race has just tightened considerably in the last couple of days. But you also have these moments that can affect campaigns where news breaks, somebody makes a gaffe, there's an investigation. We can talk about North Carolina in a minute for that. But with Murphy in particular, he is
– he's Rubio's opponent.
Yeah, Patrick Murphy, a congressman from Jupiter, Florida, actually my hometown. He is now under FBI investigation. He may not be directly under FBI investigation, but there's some illegal donation issues. That the FBI is looking into. And that's not something you want to have break the last week of an election when those undecided voters are kind of taking in their last bits of information. If the last piece of information they hear about you is something negative like that, when they go into the booth, they might vote for your opponent.
Yeah, I mean, because right now it looks like all things would be working the way Murphy would want them to work. I mean, the big Democratic surrogates for Clinton are all over the state. She's all over the state. Mm-hmm. They're trying to lay down some coattails, but certainly an investigation and some donor impropriety or some kind of question about that. That's the argument that encourages people to split their ticket, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Now, you mentioned earlier that we've had some gaffes here in North Carolina. Senator Richard Burr. I mean, I think that. First of all, I don't think anyone outside of the state knows who he is. And maybe half the state of North Carolina doesn't know he's been our senator mm-hmm. For as long as he has. But he really stepped in it and made some national news this week on two occasions, right?
Yeah. The biggest one was the comment he made in that gun shop with some people. He picked up a gun magazine, saw Hillary Clinton's face on it and said, nothing makes me happier than seeing – Hillary Clinton's face on a gun magazine, and I'm surprised they didn't put a target on her.
Yeah, he's now since apologized for that, but kind of the damage is done, right?
Yeah, the damage is done. When you get caught on camera saying something like that, doesn't matter what your intention was, it's baked into the cake.
Yeah, and then yesterday, another tape was released from his comments at a fundraiser or an event he held this past weekend, basically saying he was going to abdicate his constitutional duty as a United States senator and block any, without qualification, any nominee to the U.S. Supreme Court by a President Hillary Clinton.
Yep, and bragging at the same time about blocking the blocking the vacancy, the nominee for the vacancy in the Eastern District in the Federal Appeals Court, I believe it is.
The Federal District Court.
District Court, mm-hmm. With a judge who, African American woman who was elected statewide twice in North Carolina, Burr still won't let her through committee.
Well, I think he's had a really close race, and I think he's mm-hmm. just stayed just ahead of Deborah Ross for much of it, but. I don't know. I'm thinking that these things may be his undoing.
It is going to be the closest race in the country. I'm going to make that prediction right now that the closest Senate race in the country will be the North Carolina Senate race.
And in other races, Cooper McCrory for governor, that was not supposed to be one of the closest races in the country for governor. Our governor has been has a weight tied to him. This HB that has HB2 written on it, but then he's I mean, let's just to risk being cynical, then a hurricane came in and saved him. And now we are close. He actually demonstrated – I don't think anybody with a straight face could say that he didn't demonstrate strong leadership and responsiveness to a natural disaster in eastern North Carolina. He was all over the TV, radio, talking about what the state's efforts were to help people who were flooded and still to this day are damaged by that. And he actually had his probably only leadership moment of his entire term in office. But when we come back, let's talk about Roy and Pat and who's going to be in the governor's mansion. And we're back. You're listening to The Deep End. I'm your host, Mark Kleinschmidt. This is WCHL 97.9 and FM 1360 AM. And we were talking before the break about Roy Cooper and Pat McCrory. Pat McCrory looked like the most vulnerable Republican governor in the entire country until just recent weeks. I'm sure that Trump's movement has helped him a little bit. But also, as I was saying before the break, he's actually had an opportunity to demonstrate some real leadership helping out North Carolinians. And he has erased what looked like a 6 or 7 point lead by Roy Cooper. And it's come down now to a toss-up. About a point, maybe two, if he's but it could go either way. Certainly within the margin. Who's going to be in the governor's mansion, Jeff?
I think Roy's going to pull it off, partly on the strength of the coordinated campaign and the ground game. Roy has also just this is also the reason why Deborah Ross is so competitive against Richard Burr. He's just raised so much money. He has outraised McCrory. And really been able to get his message out there, despite a couple of poor debate performances. Mm-hmm. McCrory's just a better debater. I've seen Roy and he can work a room very, very well, but the one on one just might not be his biggest strength. That's what folks see. But HB2 is just such a drag, and people are so upset about the state of North Carolina public schools. I think ultimately that's what's going to get Roy over the line. Probably, I would think, 2 or 3 points.
And if HB2 takes any victims this year, one of them certainly got to be Buck Newton, who's running for attorney general against Josh Stein, who is a former senator from Wake County. Newton was the champion of HB2. He took glee in standing there on the floor, talking poorly about Charlotte and what its efforts were, and it now hangs around his neck like an albatross.
It sure does. Buck Newton is one of the most right-wing state senators out there. Josh Stein is a pretty strong progressive hero. Chapel Hill kid. This is really the ideological test, I think, of where the state's going to fall is that attorney general's race.
You think that this HB2 is going to have further down ballot ramification with the legislature, given how gerrymandered our House and Senate seats are?
Yep, and I'm going to tell you basically two races to watch in Wake and Mecklenburg counties, respectively.
Oh, yeah, tell us what they are.
State House races. I want you to watch Nelson Dollar.
We're all familiar with him. He's over in Wake County.
Yep, he represents Cary in the State House. If his district flips, Democrats are going to be having a good night. I was canvassing for his opponent the other day. And then in Mecklenburg County, I would watch the race between Rob Bryan and Mary Belk. That's also going to be a bellwether race of whether it's not just going to be low hanging fruit, but maybe some extra padding to get those four seats plus that we need to break the veto proof majority in the House.
Okay. Well, we only have a few seconds left. So. Okay, who's going to be our next president?
Hillary Clinton.
And what, where do you think her – what range in electoral votes do you think she's going to get?
I would say approaching about 330.
Okay, I'm going to say it's going to be a little tougher. I'm going to look for just under 300 in the 290s. So I think she's going to have a hard time keeping Nevada, keeping Florida, North Carolina in her column. And in the governor's mansion?
Cooper. I think Cooper's going to pull it off, but it'll be a lot closer than people expect right now.
And will the Dems get – will they be able to reduce the veto-proof majority that the Republicans now hold in the General Assembly in either House?
In the House, yes. In the Senate, probably not.
Okay. Well, we'll be all looking for that. Jeff, how can they keep up with you on – I know you tweet a lot. What's your Twitter handle?
I'm at Jeff_DeLuca.
Okay.
And find me on Facebook too.
And folks, find me. I'm going to be tweeting and Facebooking live all night on Election Day. I'm Mayor Mark K on Twitter, and look for me on Facebook. We'll see you after the election, and we will deconstruct all of this. Thanks for listening.